From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Environmental Protection Agency has just released the text of a new rule that would make it easier for industries to pollute our air, water, and soil. The proposed rule dramatically restricts the type of scientific data that could be used in decision-making to shape regulations. The move, overseen by EPA Chair Andrew Wheeler, a former coal lobbyist, is the latest battle in the Trump administration's war on science. The rule is so far-reaching that it would retroactively undermine the science of how pollutants like lead and mercury impact human health. My guest is Jenna Reed. She's the lead science and policy analyst with the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Welcome to the program, Jenna.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
So what exactly does this rule say, and how does it justify what it is actually proposing?
Right. So this rule is under the guise of strengthening transparency and regulatory science at the agency. And what it suggests should happen is that EPA should make the underlying data of its studies that feed into rulemakings totally public so that the agency can reanalyze them and determine whether the science that they've used can be reproduced. But what this really is an attempt by the agency to create even more procedural hurdles for itself to restrict the pool of science that can even be used by the agency in order to slow things down, add a ton of bureaucratic red tape to the process so the agency can't actually do its job to protect public health and the environment.
Where is this coming from? Has the EPA been laying the groundwork, trying to make a case, or did it just come out of nowhere?
So this proposal and the idea that EPA is engaging in what industry has termed secret science is something that came out of the tobacco industry as early as the mid-1990s as an attempt to try and change the way that EPA is doing its scientific work to add procedural hurdles that the industry could add to the process so that to distract from the actual science that might be inconvenient, for example, for the tobacco industry and other fossil fuel industry, all sorts of industries that are regulated by the EPA. So this is an old idea that was then attempted in legislation throughout the 2010s by Representative Lamar Smith, who was head of the House Science Committee. The proposal has been relatively unchanged since then in legislation. It was designed to make the underlying data publicly available in the name of transparency, but really what it would have done is increase the cost at the EPA, increase the amount of resources that need to go into rulemaking, and for what reason? It's not about transparency. It truly is about restricting the pool of science that the agency can use, and remove the ability for them to rely on more academic studies, on human health effects, and rely more on industry studies that can be kind of can go through the process without having to achieve the same type of underlying data requirements.
What does this term secret science actually means? So it sounds basically like an industry proposal that the EPA has adopted, quite unsurprising under the Trump administration. What do they mean by secret science?
Yeah, so there is this idea that, you know, the industry, the tobacco industry, wanted to try and get this message to sink in with the American public that EPA is doing all of its science behind closed doors and making decisions about the science that then feeds into regulations in a secretive way. But really, the way that the EPA does its scientific work that feeds into everything from drinking water standards to air pollution requirements, all of that is actually really transparent, and there are processes in place, including peer review, interagency review, all sorts of checks on that scientific process with public comment periods attached. So really, there's not this secret science message that industry has been trying to push to the public through this proposal at the agency and through proposals passed through legislation. This is it's a false premise. There really is no need for this sweeping policy that would not really provide more transparency for the public. What it would really do is provide more opportunities for industry to see data that it could then reanalyze and check the math of and do its own statistical models on and come up with different conclusions, as you know, an opportunity for to make the case to EPA that perhaps a study should not actually be used. And this could be really damaging.
I understand that part of their idea of what counts as secrecy is confidential medical records. So when there are studies done that rely on human health records, for example, that the industry is claiming that because every detail of that person's reaction or response to a particular chemical or toxin is not revealed, that that's somehow secret science?
Right. And so for years, we have conducted epidemiological studies. EPA has relied on them for rulemakings, and never has the underlying data had to be made available. And in fact, it's actually, the researchers are under law. They have to protect that data because it's private medical information that individuals who sign up for these studies, that are a part of these studies, trust that the researchers will not be giving this information away because it's often identifiable. Even just a few details about a person that might seem like not identifying information, people can take that information and find and can lead back to the original person. So it's really problematic if any of that information is made public.
So it sounds like the EPA and its partners in industry are claiming that anybody wanting to sign up for a study have to accept that all their details will be made public in order for the results of their study to be used in regulatory rulemaking?
Right, which is not going to happen
in
the scientific community. And, what this will result in is that there will be a chilling effect. And there will be people who are more concerned about signing up for studies in the first place because they don't want to have even the potential. Even if researchers say they would protect their data, they know that there might be a potential that it could be given up for the sake of a rulemaking, for example. And the alternate is that individuals who are doing this type of research, at the academic level, other institutions might be hesitant to conduct these types of studies that are more policy relevant because they won't be able to be used by the EPA to even make a difference, to be considered in a rulemaking to better protect public health. So it's really a lose-lose for the public health community and the scientific community at large.
Didn't former EPA head Scott Pruitt, who left in disgrace from his role, also have a similar proposed rule?
Yeah, so this proposed rule, it's all part of the same package, first introduced by Scott Pruitt and former Administrator Scott Pruitt in April of 2018 in a very rushed and secretive process, ironically enough. this rule, the proposed rule, had so many flaws, and were asked the public for comments on about 25 different questions because the rule itself was so inadequate and so clearly riddled with errors and mistakes that the scientific community came out and commented. There were over 600,000 comments on the rule, and this clarification, this is what the leaked document was reported in the New York Times, is a clarification of the original proposed rule because there was so much vague language, many terms were not defined, it was unclear how this rule would even be implemented, and the clarification has really just made all of the flaws that much more pronounced, and it has become clear that this proposal would apply across the agency, not to just a narrow subset of rules that were focused on dose response, as the April 2018 proposal had suggested.
Now, I understand that the way in which the EPA has traditionally used scientific data to shape its regulations have resulted in things like regulations to protect from mercury pollution, to reduce mercury pollution, lead contamination. These are not partisan issues. Republican Americans are just as concerned, I would imagine, as Democrats about their children's brain health being impacted by mercury, mercury contamination in tuna fish or lead contamination in paint. How would this new rule, if it were to be implemented, impact regulations that are already in place that are already shown to be successfully working?
Right. And that's what we're trying to figure out now. We know it will be damaging if this rule, whether it's only prospective or whether it's also retrospective, and it appears it'll be applied retroactively to every rulemaking that the agency has, put in place over the past few decades.
Wow. Yes, single rule would be up for potential review, and the science would potentially have to be repeated in a much more restrictive way?
Under some of the major statutes at EPA, so under the Clean Water Act, under the Clean Air Act, under the chemicals sort of regulatory regime, under Superfund law, which is CERCLA, there are, a range of statutes under which the regulations that have been put out over the years could be really jeopardized by some of these changes if the underlying studies, many of which the researchers are no longer around to even provide the underlying data, would be ruled out. And therefore, that would just result in opening up these regulations, putting EPA staff time and resources into doing that, which the costs of which have really not been understood. And, there have been way back in, a couple years ago when the Honest Act, which is one of those pieces of legislation that was put out with the same kind of premise, when that came out, there was the Congressional Budget Office did an estimate of how much that proposal would cost on an annual basis for the agency, and found that it would be $250 million of staff time and resources put into something like that. And this proposal is not exactly the same, but it would be, if it were applied retroactively, I imagine those numbers would be huge. What it ultimately would mean is EPA would not be able to dedicate its time and resources to meeting its mission of protecting public health and the environment. Instead, it would be spending pretty much all of its staff time trying to get access to underlying data and then going through and then reanalyzing all of that data and all of the methods that were used by academic and other outside and inside researchers.
If you look at the EPA's website, there are such lofty claims made about cleaning the air and water, similar to President Trump's claims that under his administration, we have the cleanest air and the cleanest water. The EPA's website talks about reducing lead in drinking water and protecting children's health and on. Whereas, do you feel that sort of messaging completely obscures the underlying EPA's quest to deregulate, to continue to allow polluters to pollute?
Yeah, I think a lot of the achievements that have been made by past administrations at really cleaning up the environment and protecting public health are at risk under this administration. We have seen scientists at the agencies not listened to. We've seen science advisory committees disbanded. And now we're seeing the very process by which science is used in rulemaking at the agency threatened by a policy that is completely arbitrary and designed by industry lobbyists who knew that if they couldn't win on the science, they'd have to break the process. So it's really disturbing to see that we could, all of the achievements we've made to have some of the improvements in cleaner air and cleaner water, and having opportunities for our kids to be safer in the environment, all of those things could be at risk because of the actions of this administration.
I know that in late October, your organization, the Union of Concerned Scientists, had a new report out, Abandoned Science, Broken Promises, How the Trump Administration's Neglect of Science is Leaving Marginalized Communities Further Behind. It takes a look at how, I guess this is a case of what many would call environmental racism, where the regulations, the deregulation, I should say, and the Trump administration's war on science shows a disproportionate harm to vulnerable communities, communities of color. It seems as though the Trump administration has a very clear-cut mandate that it has taken upon itself, that rather than this, you know, so-called draining of the swamp, it has essentially overfilled the swamp with the, you know, industry, industrial monsters, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like industry is just writing regulations. Should we be at all surprised with Andrew Wheeler's position, given that he was a former coal lobbyist, similar to Scott Pruitt and all these other industry heads who are now writing government policy to benefit their previous and likely future employers?
Right. Yeah, this administration, while claiming to have drained the swamp, is actually really infiltrated, the industry officials have really infiltrated the rulemaking process. So they have direct access to some of the changes that they have been wanting to make from the other side for years. And that it's really troubling, and we're seeing it firsthand. For example, with this transparency rule, Nancy Beck, who was formerly with the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, came directly from the American Chemistry Council, where she had lobbied on the very issues that she was then working on at EPA. And she was one of the masterminds behind this transparency proposal that she had worked on with, you know, behind the scenes at ACC as well. So we know from emails that we obtained through the Freedom of Information request that we did back in 2018, that this was very much a politically driven decision and very influenced by industry, as we know, it was their idea in the first place. So what we're seeing is policies that are being, you know, claimed to be scientific and are going to impact the scientific community broadly, but with absolutely no feedback or input from the scientific community and from EPA's own scientists, who weren't included in that initial team of people who were working on the rule from inside the agency. So it's really concerning the way that this administration has decided to leave science and also to leave community impacted communities. As you mentioned, these are communities that have systematically been left out of the process and also have been bearing the brunt of exposure of pollutants for decades. You know, it's not a new problem for them, but the Trump administration is not listening to their voices and is actually, you know, its deregulatory agenda is unfortunately making things worse.
So what is the recourse now? Is this supposed to be a proposed rule? I'm assuming there's some sort of public comment period. And is this the only sort of avenue to resist this proposal?
Right. So it seems as if this rule, you know, it just entered the Office of Management and Budget review process and then will come out and be up for a very short public comment period of about 30 days.
Is that unusually short?
For a rule of this scope and size, it's absolutely too short. And it doesn't include, well, at least we don't know for sure yet, but it doesn't seem like it will include an opportunity for a hearing for people to come in and give testimony about what the rule might mean for them and for, you know, different stakeholders.
And for something claiming to be exposing secrecy, it sounds like a pretty secretive and untransparent process.
Right, and a process that really it breaks with precedent because, like I mentioned before, the agency did not seek the input of its own science advisory board, which is supposed to weigh in on proposals that are scientific and technical in nature. Wow. at the beginning of the process, not at the very end, which is what happened. And there hasn't been this opportunity to really listen from the critical feedback that the science advisors want to provide the agency with. So there's been a lot of you know, failure to listen to the scientific community, which is made clear in the really you know, flawed rule that we have in front of us.
You
there are other opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be this comment period, and you know, it's a really good time for scientists, people in the public health community, members of the public to speak out about what this rule could actually mean for you, and why you think it's important that the agency actually focus on transparency instead of just trying to tie up the agency in extra work that it doesn't need to do.
Well, you mentioned that the rule is going to be at the Office of Management and Budget for review. Wouldn't wouldn't that cost that you had cited earlier, that estimate for how much this rule would cost, be a stumbling block?
Well, it's actually because the EPA rulemaking is not a considered, or it's not considered by the agency to be a significant rule, it actually does not, it's not going to get a full cost-benefit review by the OMB, unfortunately, because if it did, we know the cost would be staggering.
So this, again, you have, it's, you know, seems like they're trying to sidestep the proper process. If such a rule were to go through, do you care to predict the state of our rivers, our, you know, our water supplies, our air, our soil over, you know, the next decade or so? I mean, would we basically be going back in time to an era when, you know, industries ran rampant, and some Americans can remember that time?
Well, I think, you know, the finalized rule, if it comes out and if the agency still decides that this is the direction it wants to go in, it will be challenged in the courts because it, you know, it clearly is lacks justification and it seems very arbitrary. So that's one place, you know, hopefully it will be held up. But its implementation, like I said, it would tie up agency resources for so long. It's sort of unclear exactly how this would play out. But the goal of this is for that delay. So as a result, there will be, you know, important safeguards that are in the works. Like, for example, for PFAS, which are a toxic class of chemicals that are in a lot of drinking water across the country. The EPA is currently considering whether or not to set a maximum contaminant level for that class of chemicals. If this restricted science rule does end up coming out, that will only delay the EPA's ability to actually put through protections on classes of chemicals that are emerging and entering our drinking water and having real human health impacts. So the impacts will be felt in communities across the country by the sheer delay of important safeguards that this rule will create.
And I understand, Jenna, that on Wednesday, the House is expected to hold a hearing called Strengthening Transparency or Silencing Science, the Future of Science in EPA Rulemaking. I imagine that it's set up to address this very proposed rule.
It is. So, we're looking forward to this Wednesday hearing. It's important that the House Science Committee is doing this type of oversight. This is a rule with sweeping implications on the scientific community. And EPA is going to be present and hopefully answering some really tough questions about what the reasons for this rule were and what its implementation will mean on the safety of our water and the air and the environment.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for the Union of Concerned Scientists.
Sure. You can reach our website at ucsusa.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Jenna, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Jenna Reed. She's the lead science and policy analyst with the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we have been discussing the EPA's new proposed rule to undermine science in regulatory decision making. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.